down the road, you'd be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. So dream, explore, say yes to life. Be inspired to live life as an exciting adventure of discovery. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and I'm your host, Mark Susnell. Hey, everybody, this is Mark Susnell. Thanks for tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show. And as you know, every week I have conversations with people that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people that are ready to inspire us. And we're actually ourselves the ones that make it happen, because we have to want to be inspired. We have to really want to move forward. And to by listening to other people to give us a vision of what's possible in our lives. And this week I invited Dr. Mike Spino. He's the author of Beyond Running and other books about running, The Inner Spaces of Running, which I'm very curious about. I used to be a runner many years ago. And Mike Spino is one of the founding directors of the Esalen Sports Institute and the author Beyond Running. He explores the concept of conscious athleticism and in this book that's widely regarded by experts and beginners alike. And he explores the question of whether running, or any sport for that matter, can be a form of meditation, a self-knowledge. So it's my privilege to welcome Mike Spino. Spino. How do you say that? Is it Spino or Spino? I know the Mike part Spino. I got right.
Yeah, it's Mike Spino, and the book is Beyond Jogging, The Inner Spaces of Running.
All right, Beyond Jogging. And right. and you wrote this book many years ago, right?
Yes, it was published the first time in 1976.
So it's kind of become a runner cult classic, more or less.
Well, that's what I hear. Anyway.
Yeah. And so what was going on when you wrote this book in 76? And I guess that's the Esalen days. Why don't you take me back to that time?
Oh, well, it was a really, really exciting, wonderful time, because in 1972, as you know, Michael Murphy wrote Golf in the Kingdom, and he and George Leonard and Bob Kriegel and David Megacy started the Esalen Sports Center, and we had a big conference in 1973 that the New York Times itself said that it rocked the sports world. It was a whole new concept of what sport meant. And in 1974, in my life, I've the greatest running coach, I believe, in the world ever, Percy Sarity. I'd read all his books from Australia, and I convinced Michael to bring him to the United States. So in 1974, he came and gave a series of workshops and different things. And I started to teach workshops. The first things that Esalen did was, we were in San Francisco then as well as Big Sur, was to begin to teach workshops. And actually, Michael and I had the idea of having a six-month program. And I'm still friends, really good friends, with some of the people like Bruce Nelson that were in that class. Mm-hmm. And the idea was we would have a running group, and every week we would bring new things into we would have workshops and bring somebody in like George or Bob Nadau or Al Wong or Michael Murphy or Judith Aston to come in. And whatever we learned, we would start integrating it into our program. And as I started to do that, I started writing down what I was doing and what was working. George Leonard had a friend and they had just published books with a company called Celestial Arts.
I remember
top 10 or something, a publisher. And they said, well, why don't you go out there and talk to them? So I went out there, and they said, well, we'll give you $500, which is a lot of money in those days, and we'll publish the book. And so I was teaching a lot of workshops, and I was writing down what was working, what wasn't, and talked about Percy Cerity and another coach that had really influenced me, Hungarian coach called Mihai Igloy. And then I was putting all the mental things and like the George Leonard's energy work. And I was training Michael Murphy then. He had turned to running as he was a runner, and George became an Aikido master. And we experimented with so many different kind of mental trainings that we then integrated into our running. So that's how Beyond Jogging came. And it went through a couple of editions and languages, and just less than a year ago, you know, because mindful running has become like a significant term, a sunglass fashion company in New York City called District Vision contacted me and said, at the Boston Marathon, we want to republish your book because nobody's done better what you originally said. And of course, that was a lot to do with you know, training with Michael and breaking ground with different things. And at the time, you know, I had a track scholarship to Syracuse. I ran for the San Monica Track Club. So I wasn't a world-class runner, but I was a national-class runner. So, you know, I got really involved.
What events did you run?
I ran the mile, and I ran cross country, and I ran the 2 mile, and I broke the Syracuse University record in the mile and 2 mile.
Uh-huh. And so what what I'm really curious about is to tie this all into the bigger picture of life.
Yes.
Let's start back with, you did these workshops, you studied with a lot of people regarding running, and you learned a lot of different mental techniques. What are some of these mental techniques that you learn about?
Well, let me take a step back now that you're talking. When I was at Syracuse, you know, in Syracuse, the weather is really bad. And one day, I ran like a 6 mile time trial, and I kind of ran out of myself, you know. And years later, a good friend of mine, Herbert Cole, who's written 1,000 books, and he and I started a school together called Other Ways. And I used to always talk about running, and he said, and I told him about this experience. So he said, well, why don't you write it down? So actually, District Vision republished it for the marathon. But I wrote an article called Running as a Spiritual Experience, and I was able to explain, and maybe it was the first explanation of Runner's High. It was written in 1971. And it's been republished many, many, many times. And I wrote it in about 25 minutes. It just kind of came right off the top of my head. Not 20, maybe even an hour. It just came off the top of my head, and it just was there. It was that was kind of like the beginning in my beginning statement of what running was meaning to me and what I was discovering.
So why don't you share with us some of this idea of running as a spiritual experience. Share some of your thoughts about that.
Well, first of all, it can be just a grace that goes on. You have experience, maybe you're going through some period, or you've built up a mental focus or capacity. But, you know, one of the things that came out of the conference that we just had, the Sports Energy and Consciousness Festival, was this whole idea of internal and external. Like we know, and all the apparatus and things are telling us that we can get into a meditation and we can know we are, like focus bands and things like that. But and that is all built on the concept of transfer. So if I meditate and I get into a meditative state, and of course, you know, meditating with Michael, you got into a very deep state in a fast amount of time. But what we were discovering was that there were techniques you could do to apply the mental focus into the running, which you could do with soft eyes and visualization. I was taking a lot of workshops at Esalen. I was learning about guided imagery. I was learning about visualization. I was learning, like, from Bob Nadau, who was George Leonard's Aikido teacher, of how to use soft eyes and how to put an image in your mind. And we experimented, which was a kind of, I think, lucky thing, is the Hungarian coach I trained with, his system is based on very short runs, very multiple short runs and intervals. And I recognized that when I was doing that, it was 30 seconds, 40 seconds, it was easier to keep an image in your mind, and then you could multiply that by doing it, you know, numerous times. And that, mm-hmm. And then I invented this. I think I learned this.
Let me just interject something about this idea of having an image for a short period of times, because, you know, in today's world, there's so much work in everything and in creating a life you want, and terms of healing. There's so much of visualization now in terms of healing and visualizing white light. Are you suggesting that it might be better when you, let's just say, for healing purposes? Because a lot of people there's tons of stuff on the internet about visualizations and for healing and meditations. Are you suggesting that it might be better just to do this for like a 30-second period, let it go, and then come back to it at another 30-second period,
exactly.
as opposed to doing it for like 10 or 20 or 30 minutes?
Yes, because you can't hold an image that far, that long. So,
interesting.
So I realized that if you had an image and you did something as simple as wipe it away, wipe across your eyelids, call wipe away, then you can, you start condensing that period into a shorter period of time. And then if you're in a race or you're in a kind of thing and you had the same desire, and I use two principles, the push and pull, you know, like be pulled someplace or pushed up, and that you could get yourself into that mental framework. And you could be, and especially people that are really out of shape and just trying to come back, and as soon as they try to do something, they have a negative thought. And so actually I did my PhD on the idea of visual distraction, how you can distract your mind and your body accomplish something if you distract it from, if you want, I can explain what the experiment was.
Well, what about this idea of being distracted? In other words, what maybe I don't know if I've got this clear or not, but what you're saying is it's easier to hold an image for a short period of time. And if you hold it for too long, you'll get distracted, and it takes you really away from what you're trying to accomplish.
No, that's not really exact, Mark. That's not exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that sometimes it's helpful to distract yourself. Like, for instance, in our experiment, we led up. I had 75 kids in Kenya in an 8-week program, and we led up to event rehearsal, which is my main thing. And the whole idea was that in the middle of the event rehearsal script, for no reason, they didn't know that, we had people wake up, turn to their side, and mark a little chart, and then go back, and we recognized that by being distracted, they actually had a stronger ability to refocus, and that group of people in the end run ran further than the other two groups. So that was one discovery. And then the other thing is that especially people that are way out of shape, as soon as they take one or two steps, they say, I'm too fat. So when you distract them by an image like pulling or pushing, their body can do what they thought they couldn't because they were distracted into not having that negative thought.
Mm-hmm. So how can we take this concept and apply it to our lives today? How can we, as a, let's just say, take what you learned, and so for the average person that, you know, is listening to the show, that wants to live a more inspiring life, wants to get out of their comfort zone, wants to really play bigger, how could these experiments you learn and your knowledge now from doing this work for, what, 50 years? Is 40, 50 years?
Yeah, 50 years.
So how can we apply it to today's world in terms of our everyday challenges?
Well, I think most of us do a lot of things in automation, like our jobs, our interrelationships, mm-hmm. the things we say, the loops that we, you know, when we talk to someone, we go through a kind of loop in our mind and stuff. And I think
right.
we kind of all say that, but what this, sometimes we get nervous or anxious and we get thrown off. And then we, oh, I just stumbled. Oh, this guy doesn't like me. You know, mm-hmm. all those kind of things. So the idea is to get back to that sort of automation and somewhere where you know in that you're doing, that you're fine, that you can do what you're doing well, and to sort of not trick your mind, but bring your mind to a place where, you know, you're doing your best and you're expressing yourself as clearly as you can, and you're not letting other things on the outside being psyched out, or somebody having false intentions for you, or someone just not understanding what you're saying. You're able to not so much focus, but just get back to your automatic self.
Mm-hmm. So what about
the whole idea of
go ahead.
Focus? Yeah. Now I think we overdo the whole idea of focus. You know, like we see, like the great basketball coach John Wooden said, "Don't
right.
yell to the person. Say relax," because they say relax, they say, "Oh, I'm not relaxed." Something like that.
Right.
So just, you know, no, you
know.
Know, sometimes, yeah, you know that one, right?
But somebody says, yeah, now just relax. Just relax.
Yeah.
You know, it's the worst
right.
thing they could say.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So what I wanted to get into, and I talked a little bit about off air, is that this idea of running and jogging as a meditation. What are the similarities with, I know that, you know, this is active, where a sitting meditation is more passive, you're sitting down. I mean, you do there are different types of meditation, but what do you think are some of the similarities and
well,
non-similarities?
I first wrote my book, my first book. There was another book that came out called The Zen of Running, and it was just pictures of someone. Yeah, and it was just pictures of somebody running in a beautiful environment, running along, and feeling the temperature and the sense of it. I know I still coach, and I remember just the other day, I live in Atlanta, and it was really hot. And one day it was really cool, and kids said, you know, just because they noticed it, maybe if you just walked down the street, you wouldn't, wow, it's really cool, and it was kind of beautiful. And and I just watched an autobiography of Mark Twain, and
wow.
there was some beautiful things where he just expressed so beautifully, just sitting in a boat going down the Mississippi River and at times of the day, and just like being imbued with this sort of beauty. And I think that there's a lot of beautiful things. I mean, there's a lot of tragedy and pain and worry in life, but there's also some like beautiful moments. And I think that's when we close our eyes and we really, really relax and we ask for grace, and we just, you know, just do simple things like breathing and stuff. That sensibility of calmness and beauty comes over us. And that's something that, you know, I learned by practicing. And when you practice with someone that's really a good meditator, they get to that place. I mean, we have a lot of fancy names for it. But if you do something with somebody really good, you pick up a lot from them you know, without even knowing it.
And right now, I remember from talking to you at the conference that you said that you're the running coach at Georgia Tech. Did I get that right?
Well, I coached at Georgia Tech from 1981 to 1987, and then I coached at a place called Life University, where we brought a lot of Kenyan kids in, and we had an international team, and we won more national championships in a row in cross country, and still the record in track and field. And so now I just coach at some small little Catholic school, and we have a relationship with a school in Kenya near Nairobi, because I did my research for my PhD in Kenya, and I was very close to a lot of people in Kenya, coaches and famous runners, you know. So I'm still an active coach. In fact, we had a cross country meet yesterday. And I like seeing the little kids struggle with the, you know, we have some kids that haven't run very long, and we have some kids that have really, really done well and improved, but it's really beautiful to see the kids face that crisis and maybe have some natural talent and see them deal with it. And some of them deal with it better than others, and you can talk to them, and I can add my experience because I've coached so many people over so many years. That there's a lot of similarities, and you see what people do, and you can teach. You know, as well as I do. In a sports situation, you can almost—it's an unbelievable way of teaching because, you know, young people don't get into that stressful situation like that where they want to do good in a lot of things that are good for them. You know, we have the stress of academics, but
right. You know, I found it, you know, through sports, I started to, for some reason, always identify with the underdog. And I wrote an article on it. And one of the things one of the conclusions I came to was that quite often the only one that believes the underdog can win is themselves, is the underdog.
Yeah.
When you see the underdog win, it's such a great feeling because it reminds you of what's possible.
That's a great. You spark something in you because my favorite movie is Jimmy Braddock, the Cinderella Man, and I actually met Jimmy Braddock once, and it was amazing how much people loved him. Like, you know, and I still remember the night of, I was only a kid, like 13, 14 years old, but there's a scene in that movie where he walks out, you know, because he was the great underdog and he lived in an underdog era. Like you're saying, like the great underdogs, the horse Seabiscuit or Jimmy Braddock. And when Braddock comes out, the stands go quiet and then someone just yells out, "We love you, Jimmy." And every time I see that, if I see it 10 times, I cry. Because he was such a representative, and in the time of that time period, he did what everybody wanted to do. They wanted to come back. They wanted to sort of regain themselves. And that's, you know, like you say, the whole story of the underdog and how we root for them and how people motivate themselves to achieve. And sports is such an incredible, you know, metaphor for the achievement of the underdog. So, yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I mean, we get so inspired by that. The Miracle on Ice, you know, when 1980 we beat the Russians. You know,
yeah, no, one of the greatest stories of all time.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, well, no, I've always the two things I've done since I've been a little kid have I've played music since I've been 6 years old. Just about every day of my life, I play music.
Now, wow,
I play
several
instruments, and I've always played a sport. And for example, my latest sport, you know, I played football in high school, ran track, and then I played ping pong in college. I played handball, and then I've been a tennis player. But lately, I've been playing this game called pickleball. Do they have it back where you are?
Yeah, I've heard of that. I heard it. Yeah, I heard it's just a very
it's so much
game.
Fun. It's so much fun. I can't believe it. You know, we're running out of time, but I always like to ask my guests a few questions, and one of them is what inspires you right now?
Well, I mean, I think that this company, District Vision, that I'm working with, has really inspired me because they showed that you can be discovered by someone when you didn't even know yourself, and they believe in me, and they're inspiring me to do things that I wanted to do 50 years ago, and they're giving me a chance to do it. And there's two guys, Tom Daley and Max Vallott, and they're guys that were very successful in the fashion world and now are doing mindful running, and they have these sunglasses. And that's really inspired me. That's inspired me more than anything.
And what is that website if people want to take a look at it?
It's called district.vision.com.
District.vision.com.
And there's no dot. It's just districtvision.com. And the thing that's where you can buy my book the least expensively. And
right.
They wrote an introduction, and I wrote an introduction to bring things up to date from, that's really inspired. That's really, really inspired me. And, you know, just getting renewed by teaching kids, you know, teaching. I teach at Georgia State. I teach international sports and open kids' minds to all the opportunities in the sport world for, like, the explosion of women commentators. You know, this every time we turn on the football, like, you'll, in the next week or so, see all these females that now are sports commentators.
Interesting,
And it's an incredible development. It's just incredible.
Yeah. One other thing is, what gives you hope right now?
Well, I had a heart attack 6 years ago, and six months ago, and I thought that that's the end of it. But what gives me hope is that what I tried to start a long time ago, I might still be able to do it. And you know, and I don't think I ever really completely gave up, but I came pretty close. And now I have hope that I regain my health, and that's a hope for me because I enjoy it so much, and I can see that I can do something and it works, and that's given me hope, and just small things. My children are doing so well after going through tough periods. My daughter is a cancer brain specialist. My son has finally made it as a musician, in L.A. after struggling and living in the trees.
That
gives me, you know, music. And he's got a best-selling album out now, and he's does a lot of screen direction and everything. And just to see his resilience. His resilience has really inspired me.
Right.
He's been down so many times.
Resilience is I'm involved with a group you might be interested in getting to know, and some of my listeners have heard her. Emma Bell is a retired judge from Scotland, and she started what's called the Global Resilience Project, where she's gone around the world interviewing 50 people that have survived horrific circumstances, and not only survived it, but they're thriving. They're thriving, and that's what it was. She identified these people. It's an amazing work. Her and her husband have done this, I'm not sure if that's exactly why she retired, was to do this work, or it was just time for her to move on. But it's an incredible project, and I'm telling her, everybody, about her. I'm going to have her back on the show mid-October. Incredible work she's doing. One other thought is we're running out of time, is what if there's one bit of advice that you have for people out there, what would it be?
I think that the persistence alone is omnipotent. You know, it's just is never to sort of like give up completely on your dreams. I think that's more than anything else, just to keep on being persistent, identify what you really want to do, what makes you happy, what you love, what you're good at, and just being persistent. And that's that whole thing about resilience and persistence and, you know, and seeking expression, believing in having faith. And, you know, faith in something beyond yourself is, I'm a Christian. So, yeah, so I think I would say that. I would say that's the most important thing. Love the people around you and have character and believe it, have them believe in you, believe them. But having, you know, just having a persistent hope.
Well, thank you, Mike, for joining us. And for you out there, we've been listening to the Inspire Possibility show. Mike Spineau, I got it right this time, was our guest.
Yes, sir.
And join us next week for another enlightening, cutting-edge leader to inspire us, to kind of give us something to think about. And in the meantime, journey on.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you feel inspired to take the next step in your life. And if you haven't already, please take the time to visit my website at inspirepossibility.com and discover the various services and products we offer that could just very well change your life.